Why don't we go ahead and get started here? I know we've got a lot of things to go over. I appreciate everybody joining us this evening. Melissa, I'll turn it over to you. I know you've got a long list of things to talk about.
Certainly. Good evening, everybody. Thanks for joining us this evening. Just a couple of housekeeping items from Samson. If your schedule is not available on your dashboard, you need to be using the search function in Aprima. I put a screenshot on the agenda that I sent out about an hour ago. All providers need to complete rounds and notes, even if the patient list is not available on your dashboard. You're emailed a hard copy, refer to that, and then unfortunately, I know it's more time consuming, but we do need to be searching for those patients and completing notes timely. Debris, a couple of, well, there's a laundry list of stuff. Facilities have been giving us feedback, so I'm going to touch base on some of the points that they've brought up recently. Some of the facilities there, they haven't been happy on how we're handling our debridement or procedure consents. That should be something you do, contacting the family, whether it's verbal or in person, and clearly communicating, what your intention is and getting that consent signed. The healing status, making sure that you're properly choosing a healing status. We've noted people are healing out wounds and then it appears to be a mistake, but then the next week you're marking it as like same stable or decline. Unfortunately, that makes it appear like it's a new in-house wound for the facility. So we need to be diligent about, properly documenting healing statuses. Onset
Yes, sir.
dates.
I just want to go. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just want to go back to the consent issue one for one moment here. I know we've discussed this and brought this up before, but really the only person that's appropriate to get consent on a patient is the person that's doing the procedure. You need to be informing the patient or the patient's family of the pros and cons of the procedure, the risks, the complications, and what happens if you don't. That's not something that should be expected to be discussed or explained by anybody other than the person doing it. If you, are not comfortable having that conversation, then, you really need to kind of reconsider, doing that procedure. It's always been, the mantra of the person doing it. Now, I understand sometimes, with patients, families, it may be difficult to get in contact or in touch. Use the facility or the treatment nurse as a liaison to help arrange a discussion, but that discussion still needs to be happening between you and the patient or the patient's correspondent.
Thank you, Dr. Karamadi, because that's exactly what the concerns have been, and the feedback from facilities, that the nurses shouldn't be explaining procedures that they're not completing. So the next item is onset dates, and making sure that they're accurate. So we need to be verifying with the facility what the onset date is. Just because we are seeing them for the first time doesn't mean that's the correct onset date. If they were admitted a week prior, it would be, their admission dates. Some facilities actually have, they've tried to manage wounds on their own. So the onset date could be 2 or 3 months old. So please collaborate with the facilities to make sure dates are correct.
That also affects everybody on potentially on biologics, that from the onset of the wound, not from when you first saw the patient.
Well, more so, Mil, that really, I mean, it makes our healing rates look inaccurate for all the reports that we send out every month. It can impact the facility, making it look like the patient has additional wounds that they don't actually have because the dates conflict. So this puts the facility at jeopardy of getting minimum a D tag, but potentially an immediate jeopardy, which comes along with a civil money penalty by the hour, if we have a lot of incorrect onset dates in their building.
If you ever need to explain, the comment section is where you can do that. You can leave your onset date consistent with the facility, and in the, in the comment section, you can comment that this note predated the admission, and dates back to whenever if you're, in regards to things like biologics. So you can give further explanation or discussion if there is any sort of discrepancy. But, you know, for the most part, that onset date needs to be consistent with what the facility is documenting as well.
And then addressing same stable and declining wounds appropriately. So typically, the facilities or the clinical staff, we're not going to put anything on your audit if it's dry, stable eschar on the foot, because that should be left alone. And then the treatment's generally not changed. But all other declining wounds and same stables need to be changed on that third visit. Actually, a declining wound needs to be changed on the visit that it's noted. Same stables is that on that third week. Because facilities will also get cited for this if we're not appropriately managing wounds. Writing comments, that it's chronically infected or, critically colonized, things of such, that's not going to fly with the state. And the other component to that is the state surveyors will look and ask what we're doing to treat that infection, the critical colonization. Dr. Karamadi, do you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about these issues and matters before, is that, you know, an active infection is obviously a hindrance to healing. And so, you know, you need to be taking steps to address that infection, whether it's acute or chronic. Again, if it's something that you're not comfortable managing, then there needs to be initiative to get other specialists involved. But something needs to be happening when infection is documented. You can't just say infection week after week and not do anything. That's just not really appropriate patient care. So again, if you want to explain in more detail what's going on with the infection, that's fine. But you know, there needs to be some proactive approach to the infection as well.
Thank you. The next one is wound etiologies and wound types. We've been getting a lot of feedback that providers are calling everything pressure, especially on the foot. And I don't. They're wanting us to look at the patient as a whole. If they're diabetic, they have PAD, PVD. Are these wounds arterial? Are they diabetic? And classifying them appropriately based on their diagnoses. Most facilities will get ABIs or any other supportive tests that we need to make sure that we have the supportive documentation. If you feel like something's a pressure on your first visit and they don't have a diagnosis of diabetes, certainly if you get ABIs and they show, PAD, PVD, you have the right to reclassify that accordingly. And facilities would prefer you to do so. The next couple just have to do with, how we mean a professional attitude and demeanor when we're in the facilities. So we should never be referring to staff or residents by kid, honey, sweetie. We should be addressing all staff and residents by their proper names. If a state surveyor would come in and hear one of us saying, "Hi, sweetie, I'm here to treat your wounds," that's actually a violation of their resident rights, and they will get cited. And the other part of this is, maintaining a professional attitude, when we're upset or when things aren't, going as we anticipate in a building, no swearing at the staff or in front of the staff, no swearing in front of the residents, because this will also lead to a citation. Dr. Karamadi, do you have anything you want to throw in there?
I can't agree with you more on all of those issues. I mean, I think it's just really, you know, keep your calm, keep your composure. You know, I know we all have rough days, but, you know, if you need a moment, step away. You know, don't do something that might jeopardize your ability to continue servicing that facility.
Well, correct. If you feel like you're getting to that breaking point, step away, call your RM, call Dr. Karamadi. He's always willing to listen when he's available. Call one of us. Vent to us, don't vent to the staff. And then, based on what our conversation is, hopefully we can, partner with the RMs and get all of us together and maybe figure out a better solution for what's going on in these facilities. Skin sweeps. This has been a
One
hot
second
topic.
before you go further,
Go
just
ahead.
to reiterate on that, We have actually lost facilities because of this over the years, and very significantly. So, you know, sometimes you can do it at one place and you lose a whole chain because they say your doctors don't, you know how to deal with our staff. So, you know, this is critically important to pay attention to.
Thank you, Mel. So skin sweeps have been a really hot topic lately. Our facilities, that is a service that we offer them when we onboard our facilities. And they, a lot of them want this service. So we have to make sure that, you know, if your facility is asking, you're letting your RM know so they can get it scheduled accordingly and appropriately. I know some buildings don't want this service, and that's fine too. But for the buildings that do want this service, we need to make it happen. And the second part of this is, if you don't have time to fit that skin sweep in your schedule and the facility wants a skin sweep, your RM will schedule it with another provider that does have that availability. We have to make these skin sweeps happen. Communicating all new or declining wounds to the DON and administrator after your weekly visit. You know, whether you want to do this in person, do it with a recap email, but this is something that I'm hearing, you know, nationally from all of our states, that's not happening. You know, DONs and administrators need to know if there are new wounds and declining wounds so they can do staff education. They may have to explain this to a family. So we all need to make sure that they are not blindsided, you know, by any new and declining wounds. Measurements, multiple wounds should be measured separate or independently and separately. If a patient has an existing wound on their foot and develops a new wound on the same foot, you have to measure them separately. We've been getting feedback that providers have been measuring like all the wounds on the feet together, even though they have different onset dates. So that just gets muddy. So make sure you're consistent. And then just inaccurate measurements overall, be mindful to always measure in centimeters. I know you guys as doctors, especially my surgeons, measure in like millimeters, but that's very confusing to the facilities. And always present your measurements length, width, and then depth. That's what I have this evening. I know it was a lot. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, feel free to reach out to me. I can review any one of these topics with you individually. That's not a problem.
Thank you, Melissa. Any
You're welcome.
Any questions? All right then. Next thing
no,
on.
No question.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Cardin. Next thing on schedule tonight, I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Gatto to the call. He is one of our Ohio physicians. He's been with us for about a year or so. He's briefly just going to tell us regarding one of the success stories of his biologic use. So, Dr. Gatto, I appreciate you taking the time tonight to speak to everybody. I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
Perfect.
Good. The thing that just wanted to first say, the thing that interests me in biologics is the potential for healing stage three pressure wounds, which in our facilities and medically complex patients are national heal rates, not with just our company, but overall is about one third. So, you know, dealing with some chronicity, wanted a different modality. When I first looked at this opportunity, you know, the patients and the way we screen them is very, very specific. So it's never a large number of your census that will be on biologic grafting. So I looked in and little by little looked overall, worked with the team and found a way we could screen or census and found a few patients to work with. The one patient in particular that so I started grafting about 3 months ago, and I think I'm about five or six or seven patients in, but I had a patient with the sacral stage four down to the bone, pretty good candidate overall. He's a diabetic, but his A1C was well controlled. And I got him to granulate over the bone because you can't graft on top of a bone or tendon, and started him up, and we grafted him for a straight 10 weeks. He was approximately, I would say, 2.5 centimeters wide and probably about three long, and always, of course, down to the bone. But got him granulated first, started grafting him, and today he's post-graft about a month, and his wound is just about the size of half of a pea. It's 100% granulated, and it's gonna close the whole way, but he's one of my most recent successes. But I wanted to have an opportunity to use these products on a few patients. I figured I would work over a period of 1 year, graft 10 patients, and then have at least an anecdotal view of what was happening so that I could use these on more patients. I'm fairly certain I'm seeing good patient selection, so the candidates are good through our team, and also good results with our patients that are good candidates. I didn't find it difficult to incorporate into my regular routine because I like efficiency, and it's not, it's easy, it's not disruptive. The process is smooth and brief. It's not hard to do bedside. The product, we have a good team that makes sure we get our product every week delivered to your home, which is nice. The product is dry, which means you can stick it in your bag and it's fine. And I think it's a pretty good modality now for us. In addition, we are paid extra for these, and that's helpful too. Of course, the practicing medicine, traveling from site to site is there's an expense associated with that, so that's also helpful. But if anybody would like to reach out to me about the process I use, because for me it's about process. I like things to be fit, done, happen efficiently. I'd be more than happy to share that with you, how we mine the census for appropriate patients. And then, of course, pretty much the ones we send up get approved. So right now I'm only grafting one patient in my census on part-time, but I think we're gonna f I just finished two skin sweeps, so I'm looking to those, and there's probably at least one more in there somewhere. But appreciate the opportunity to use this new product, and I think it's helps us. Thank you.
Thank you
Thank you,
very much,
Dr.
Dr.
Gatto.
Ghetto.
You're welcome.
Anybody have any questions? Anything they'd like to bring up about that?
I was just curious, how what were the measurements on the initial when you first saw the wound?
The last wound that I described, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was I could probably pull it up and give you exact, but in my memory,
Just
it's
roughly.
probably about 3.5, a sacral wound, 3.5 by about 2.5, and the depth was fairly deep down to the obviously down to the bone. So he's incontinent and pretty much bed bound. So he was a little bit of a challenge because we try to make sure they get unloaded, repositioned, air mattress, the whole bit. He turned around really quickly. I have a couple more like that too that have done really, really well. But the process of selection is accurate. It really gets us into an area where you would expect these particular patients, if you could see them through 10 weeks of therapy, and you can have a gap in that, I think up to 2 weeks. And so you're going to have some good results. I'm working another guy right now. He's a quadriplegic, a younger patient, but really challenged with some anemia and some nutritional issues. And he has a chronic recurrent sacral ulcer that I've been working for. I'm on week five right now. He clearly is way less deep, and the borders are starting to improve on him. And so he's looking pretty good too. I suspect he'll probably recover.
Thanks, Dr. Gano.
Welcome.
Is the limit to do 10 only maximum? A 10 in the lifetime of the patient, or 10 in a year, or what is that limit?
That may be a Melissa Chinchar question.
Go ahead, Dr. Karamati. Dr. Karamati will answer it.
Sure. So the limit is for any particular wound, it's 10 grafts in a 12-week span over the course of a year. So if for some reason that wound didn't come to closure, it persisted, you know, 12 months from the last application, you can begin applying again. Or if it's at a point where you really think maybe just two or three more applications are needed after those initial 10 applications, you can oftentimes petition and write to the insurance justifying the need for a couple. But those are the kind of the general rules for it.
Okay, great. I've got a patient that I grafted 10 times. I got amazing healing. This is in a venous ulcer, typically medial malleolus. And I got almost to closure, and then it started to, you know, gradually get larger over the next year, despite, you know, debriding it weekly and elevating it and giving her compression. And now it's, you know, I think one of the problems with this lady is that when we're not watching her, she puts her legs in a dependent position. And I think that stresses that wound. But that's the person I'm thinking about.
Sure.
You know, I got a very good result with the biograft.
There's yeah, there's another qualifier that I just want to make sure everyone's aware of, and that is that's for a single wound. If there are multiple wounds, you can use grafts on each of them if they are appropriate.
Right.
Not automatically, but so 10 times is not the limit per patient. It is per wound.
No. I've got one I'm doing right now that has two wounds. So, yeah. I'm aware of that.
And just a reminder to everybody, the grafts can be used in conjunction with other treatments or therapies. You know, for example, in this case, you could try doing the graft and then an Uniboot on top of that. You know, that might help with some of the compression and things like that. Or, you know, it also probably minimizes the chances that the graft might be taken off. Or you could use it in a wound vac in Dr. Gatto's patient's situation. So you can use them in you know with other therapies. It doesn't necessarily have to be on its own by itself. So just keep that in mind.
Could you go over how to dress that for either of those situations? Say with an Uniboot or with a negative wound vac.
So with an Uniboot, what I would probably personally do. And again, by no means is this, you know, any sort of, you know, gold standard. This is just kind of the way that I prefer to do it. But I would probably put the graft down. I would still put my oil emulsion and alginate over top that. But then I would just wrap the entire, you know, from toes to knees in an Uniboot. And if obviously if there's multiple, you know, wounds that I'm grafting, then I would, you know, do an individual graft and individual oil emulsion over each of those. You know, that just, I guess, would help to kind of ensure the consistency of compression, at least over the week.
Okay.
In the case of a wound vac, I think ideally what you need to do is over your graft and oil emulsion, you may want to put some white foam down and then, you know, the black foam over top that might help to, I guess, lessen the chances that the graft will get sucked up, or I should say the dissolved graft will get sucked up before it incorporates. So, you know, you do want to have some barrier in that instance so that the graft is staying on the wound and not in your canister.
Yeah, I would probably have to order the white because we don't have white.
Yeah, it doesn't usually come standard, but most supplier should be able to get you that.
Okay.
All right, great, great questions. Any other comments or questions about any of these? Right, very good. Milt, I'll turn it over to you. I don't know if you have anything else that you'd like to add for this evening.
So on the other side, whether we're talking about biologics or other things, we've got to make sure that the documentation really supports what we're doing. And if it doesn't, we can't just be ordering things. That's the way to get us, the facility, and you personally, in a tough bind with, CMS or any other regulatory agencies. Right now, you might have noticed that the government is looking into any and all kinds of issues that they feel do not follow proper medical protocols, and they're basing a lot of that on documentation or the lack thereof. So we've got to make sure that we follow strictly. If you see the need for whatever, whether it's a debridement, whether it's a biologic or some other, type of procedure, just make sure you properly document it, that so that it is clear that we're not doing anything inappropriate, that we're following all the right processes. And, we are doing things the way they should be based on medical necessity. That's really it.
All right,
I have a
thank you, Bill.
question. I have a question regarding that. If there's billing discrepancies could lead to something like that, is that something that the billing department would let us know about? Of course, maintaining a good relationship, co good conversation relationship with the staff at the facility would bring that up also. But would our billing department, do they have ways of flagging that and letting us know how we can modify our documentation?
Dr. Gatto, I'll actually answer that. Yes.
That's
So,
what I thought.
Tish and the billing team will actually send you an email if you're missing key components, ex especially for your biologic notes. You know, if you inadvertently put the wrong graft size, or didn't document zero waste, or if you had any waste, they do pick up on some key components, and they will notify you in conjunction with either myself, or we have a lady on staff now, and her name is Holly. So if you are missing any key components, you will hear from one of us. The other
Perfect.
thing you'll
Thank
hear
you.
from the billing team for is like missing like ROS, PE. If you don't have enough key components in your note to bill it out, you'll hear from the billing team.
But I think the other key thing here is that, although we have these other individuals reviewing and kind of keeping a close tabs on things, those clinical indications is still all of our responsibility. They're not the ones to know all the time or whether this patient should or should not get grafted. That onus of burden is left on you, and that's something that we all need to be very familiar with the guidelines, the inclusion exclusion criteria. That stuff needs to be really checked by all of us that are using these grafts. So we've tried to streamline and make that process easy to kind of help remind you of the criteria. If anybody needs, the little reminder cards, be more than happy to send you one out if it got lost. But please really, pay attention to those criteria and make sure your patients are checking off all of those criteria and that you've, done all the medical optimization that that you need to. Right. Any additional questions? Anything else? Right. The last thing to go over is the article. I'm hoping everybody this time around has had a chance to review the article. I certainly found some things that were interesting that were new for me, so I hope you all found it helpful as well. We've got a couple of questions. Hopefully you should have gotten those as well. I can read off the questions. I'd appreciate a volunteer to give a brief answer explanation, and we can move quickly through them. So the first question, the article discusses several amino acids crucial for wound healing beyond general protein synthesis. Explain the specific roles of arginine and glutamine in promoting wound repair. Have any volunteers?
I can do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Arginine, glutamine are the two in question. Is that right? Okay, good. It's with arginine is precursor to nitric oxide, and it's a necessary component for the inflammatory response, collagen synthesis, and neovascularization. And the article also goes on to mention glutamine. It's a metabolic antioxidant and also immunomodulatory and anti-inflammatory component essential for wound healing. I think the article also was related to post-surgical cases. Is that right, Dr. Karamadi?
It did, yes. It did
Yeah.
include some
Yeah. Okay.
post-surgical
All
elements.
right. Of course, many of our patients are nutritionally compromised and makes it tough under these circumstances. But just wanted to mention that the post-surgical research as related to our patient population is a little different, but we can certainly normalize at least some of the nutritional components.
I thought it
Exactly.
was
It's
odd
not.
that it said that, but I think they when they looked at it, the keywords that they used to search, I don't think it would really exclude other wounds. It was kind of hard to tell, but that was interesting.
I think you're both right. It did have a little bit of a focus on post-surgical and pre-surgical patients, and their nutrition status. But I think a lot of this can really be extrapolated to our patient population as well. Next question is, while carbohydrates are essential for energy and wound healing, the article points out a significant detrimental effect of hyperglycemia. Elaborate on the specific physiological mechanisms through which hyperglycemia impairs wound healing and increases infection risk.
I can take that.
Thank you.
So these are diabetics who I think generally would need insulin. I think this is the kind of patient who's not just got mild diabetes, but probably severe diabetes, so that they're out of control, they're hyperglycemic. And the article talks about how it decreases the way neutrophils are able to fight off or help with fighting off infection and macrophage dysfunction. It talks about some biochemistry that was over my head, meaning glycation of proteins and lipids, but I believe them. And it also talked about a thing that I think we all see with diabetics is reduced blood flow. So these patients have a relative hypoxic state, especially if you're looking, say, at diabetic feet. And that could also lead to just impaired wound healing, like the way collagen is synthesized, or how the wounds are able to come together with remodeling. And then the sort of the final but obvious complication of patients that are hyperglycemic is that they frequently get infections because they're more susceptible.
You're right. Thank you, Dr. Cardan. The review distinguishes between the roles of omega-3 and omega-6 polyunsaturated fatty acids in inflammation and wound healing. Based on the article, describe how Omega-3 can modulate inflammation and contribute to expedited healing, contrasting this with general inflammatory role of omega-6. Any volunteers?
I can answer that one.
Thank you.
So I talk about essential fatty acids, particularly omega-3s, are important for cellular membrane integrity, and help with the inflammatory response, that helps with wound healing. And then just in general, lipids are carriers for fat-soluble vitamins, which are also important for wound healing.
Dr. Dallas. Vitamin E is explicitly not recommended for wound healing, according to the article. Explain the observed detrimental effects of vitamin E on collagen synthesis and inflammatory processes that led to this recommendation.
I don't know. People are always throwing vitamin E on wounds because they think that it helps your scar, if you believe that. But here they're talking about the opposite. In other words, I think hypervitaminosis E, and that it actually impedes collagen formation.
Well, exactly. It does negatively affect the collagen synthesis, and that, inhibits the fibroblast proliferation and collagen deposition. So that may be why it is used for scarring, is that it kind of disrupts that process of scar maturation. So where it helps the scar to become softer or more pliable, but in terms of wound healing, that can be detrimental because it's not allowing the foundation to be established for that collagen matrix and collagen synthesis to get that wound to closure.
Right.
The article states that vitamin A counters delayed healing caused by corticosteroids. Describe the mechanism by which corticosteroids impair wound healing, and then based on the review's implications, how vitamin A might counteract this specific effect.
I'll take that one.
Thank you.
Vitamin A, let's see, and corticosteroids. Corticosteroids have an effect of decreasing fibroblast activity, decreasing collagen synthesis, decreasing angiogenesis, and delaying epithelialization. Vitamin A can counter that by delaying healing caused by the corticosteroids by downregulating TGF-beta and insulin-like growth factor one. So therefore, vitamin A would be increasing fibroblast activity, increasing collagen synthesis, increasing angiogenesis, and accelerating epithelialization.
Very good. Thank you, Dr. Antello. Beyond its antioxidant function, vitamin C is crucial for wound healing. Detail its specific enzymatic role in collagen synthesis that makes it indispensable for tissue repair. For the sake of time, I'll take this one here. So vitamin C is an essential cofactor for the various hydroxylases, which is vital for the cross-linking and stability of the collagen triple helix. So without the vitamin C, the stable collagen can't be formed, and that leads to impaired tensile strength of the new tissue with delayed closure. We'll do one more question here. With
I was
several
just going to point
materials.
out that that every time I go sailing, I hand out limes. Just kidding.
All right.
I can
While
appreciate that
settlement
sailing joke.
while several minerals are mentioned, explain the specific multifaceted role of zinc in promoting wound healing, encompassing its impact on re-epithelialization, tissue regeneration, and immune response. All right, if somebody would like to close us out here.
I can do that one.
Thank you.
Zinc promotes re-epithelialization and generation of new tissues. It says that in the inflammatory response, zinc upregulates your immune response by activating lymphocytes, stimulating antibody production, and mitigating the risk of infections. So it is upregulating immune response through lymphocytes, antibodies, and thus decreasing the risk of infection. That
All
is
right.
it.
I'll open the floor up to any questions or comments.
Dr. Karamadi, Milt has one more item he would like to review.
Oh, sure.
I don't want to mess up any of the clinical discussion, but I just wanted to quickly mention one more thing I forgot to bring up before. And that is when there are potential scheduling changes. Let's say you want to change the day, the facility wants to change the day. You need to make sure that your regional manager and and the facility are all on the same page on this. Sometimes we have situations where you may have talked to someone and they say okay, but it's not passed on down through our entire team. And later we get a complaint. Your provider changed the date without any approval on our, side. And that doesn't work. And they will be quick to do that and blame you. So the best thing to do is to always make sure as soon as that happens, your regional manager is contacted so that they can go and make sure that all the powers that be at whatever facility are in acknowledgement and in agreement that this is not going to be a problem or an issue. So, please make sure to do that. This is for your own benefit as well as everybody concerned. That's really it for me.
Very good. Milt, one other thing that I wanted to also add that I forgot to mention earlier. Just want to remind everybody that you should have received an email from Lauren. We have kind of our annual training to complete on cybersecurity, HIPAA, and workplace harassment. There are still a number of individuals that haven't completed that. You should have been sent the link if you haven't. If you didn't receive it or you're having any issues logging in, please reach out to Lauren. But that does need to get done pretty quickly. So if you haven't done that, please do so.
Yes, that's a regulatory requirement that we have to report on and make sure that everyone's compliant with.
Anything else that anybody would like to discuss? Any questions, comments? All right. In that case, I will thank you all. If there is any interest or for future topics or future articles to for discussion, please reach out to me. I'm always more than happy to find current information and things like that to discuss and to kind of further all of our education in treating wounds. So thank you, everybody, and good night.
Thank you.
All right.
Good
Bye-bye.
night. Thank you.